Money is a bit tight, I think, for most of us, certainly for me, and I bet you for you as well. And tell you, when it comes to eating, we don't want to skimp in you know, we want to eat right, and we want to spend the money to eat right. But, you know, there are ways that I think you can save a little money and eat right, and we want to talk about that today. Eating right when the money's tight. With our two guests, Professor Sue Nitzke of the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison. She's a UW Extension nutritional scientist. Gail Coleman is Nutritional Education Program Specialist with UW Extension, and she supports staff providing nutrition education to low-income families across Wisconsin. So we're visiting with them today, and certainly if you have some questions or maybe you've got some ideas of your own, we welcome them. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. Anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. You can email us, too, at talk@wpr.org. Sue Nitzke, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Good to be here, Larry.
And Gail Coleman, nice to have you with us for the first time.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm looking forward to it.
Appreciate having you both here. And Sue Nitzke, the prices of food have gone up. Do you have any figures on that?
I looked at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's website this morning, and they still have estimates for 2008, but they said the forecast, and this is before they haven't assessed the flood effects yet, is that food prices are going to go up 5% this year. They went up 4% last year, and that was the highest increase since 1990. Eggs, dairy, and poultry are up about 4%. The price of food away from home has gone up about 4%. And as you may know, Americans are spending just about half. Last year it was 49% of their food dollar on food that's eaten away from their home.
Hmm.
So there's, people are feeling the pinch, and the USDA statistics support that if you've noticed your food bills are going up, that's because your food bills are probably
going up. Right. Absolutely.
Right. And overall, high income, low income, and everybody put in the middle put together, we spend about 10% of our disposable income on food, and that percentage is slowly inching up.
Yeah, slowly inching up. And Gail, of course, you worked with many families who are below that average income level by quite a bit, and it's got to be even worse for harder for those families.
Oh, they are struggling, and of course there are all the other pieces that come into it with the transportation and rural families having to get to grocery stores, maybe not having the access. So there are multiple things that are getting in the way of being able to eat a healthy diet on a limited budget.
Yeah, and by healthy diet, we're talking the food pyramid?
Pretty much the My Pyramid guidelines, which are based on the U.S. Dietary Guidelines for Americans, which mean plenty of fruits and vegetables, eating whole grains most of the time, lean meats, low-fat dairy products, things like that.
Yeah. And these have all gone, I mean, always gone up, Sue.
Right. Adam Drinowski is probably the most famous researcher in this area. He's from Seattle, their School of Public Health.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually published an article in the Journal of the American Dietetic Association last December where they looked at 372 foods. They took out beverages because it doesn't work with liquids. And they actually divided these foods into five, they're called quintiles, but, you know, high and low categories by how many calories you get for your dollar. And they found that the more nutrient-dense foods tended to be the more expensive per calorie. And it's called energy-dense. The ones that are high in fat and sugar were the cheapest per calorie. So all that makes it not impossible. And you can still have a wonderfully healthful and enjoyable food repertoire for an economical amount. But it takes more planning and more effort than it used to.
Yeah, sure does. Well, Shirley in Prentice has a question, so let's go to Shirley. Hi, Shirley. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome, Larry. Your voices are coming in quite faint, so I hope I can hear you. Some of us were discussing just what your guests were talking about, the basic food groups, only we were thinking of actual foods. If we had to, say, have just 15 different foods, and get by as cheaply as possible, such as, say, milk, eggs, oatmeal, some oil, something like cabbage, potatoes, what would be the least you could get by on? And that would mean making your own bread and not buying any dry cereals, but prepare your own hot cereals.
Yeah.
Was there, say, 10, 12, 15 different foods one could get by on?
That's a good question, Shirley. And let's turn to Gail for that. Gail, comment?
Okay, well, I will answer your question. I'll try and speak a little louder also about 15 foods. But before I do that, I just wanted to share with you, excuse me, last fall, the food stamp in Wisconsin, food stamp program, had a food share challenge. And actually, this was sponsored by the Wisconsin Food Security Consortium in conjunction with UW Extension, where they actually challenged people to eat within a food stamp, an average food stamp allotment, which would be about $21 a week. And I tried that, but added another dimension to it to actually follow the dietary guidelines. And that would be the recommendations in the various food groups. And I found that it was a somewhat limited repertoire of foods that I could choose from and still stay within that. But I was able to follow the dietary guidelines. And some of the high nutrient-dense foods that were low in cost were things like, as you mentioned, oatmeal. Definitely less expensive than some of the ready-to-eat cereals. But I will also comment that I compared prices again just recently to see how much some of those have gone up, and something like oatmeal had not gone up in price since last fall, and some of the more sugary cereals were comparable to the less sugar sweetened cereals in price. So there's good and bad news there. As far as some of the fruits and vegetables, carrots, potatoes, actually fresh spinach was pretty reasonable at that time, although I know that has gone up in price. Canned tomatoes, tomato sauce, things like that. Canned beans, I think that's one food source that a lot of us don't eat that is very economical, a good substitute for meat, the dry beans and peas. Applesauce, frozen orange juice, bananas. And even though it has gone up in price, a gallon of low-fat milk is still a pretty good bargain. So those are a few things that you might add to that list of 15 foods.
Hmm.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's good. I use powdered milk because it's rather than running 20 miles to the store. Low-fat, I mean skim milk, really what it is. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Ellen in Milwaukee, I think, is up next. Let's go to Ellen. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Larry, and thanks for taking my call. I told your screener that I was so upset about this issue, I was afraid to get on the radio, but she urged me to. I was going to comment about the speakers have already somewhat addressed, but I wanted to speak for the people who are out here who are working and who are poor. This is not struggling. This is suffering. People are not able to buy. When I go to the store, I'm afraid I can't afford a gallon of milk or eggs or even the beans that people are talking about, the very inexpensive food. And I don't have children to feed. And I think this is just literally an abomination that is happening in this country. And I can't imagine that many, many other people are feeling it as suffering, not struggling.
Thanks for calling.
Yes, and let me add to those very sincere remarks by saying that the Farm Bill that recently passed had some provisions to help make food stamps and some of the food assistance programs more readily available, especially to some people who had a hard time getting to where you had to apply and that sort of thing before. So people, you know, there's things that we would have loved to see in the Farm Bill that didn't get in there, but there are some provisions to help make food stamps and other assistance programs more readily available. There are also studies being done around the state of Wisconsin to assess what are called food deserts. We call them food deserts because there are areas, especially in some of the rural areas and actually some of the very, very inner cities where it's kind of gas station convenience store is the most available. And that's actually being studied. What are the prices? What's the quality of fruits and vegetables and other items in those locations? And our colleagues at the Department of Health, the Department of Health Services, are compiling that data and using it to as the background for some plans that are being made to help not only educate individuals and families about how to have economical food and how to make a, if they need to make smart use of assistance programs and food pantries and such, but also to help policymakers in those areas make changes to help them have better availability of nutritious foods at affordable prices.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much for calling on Anne. And I think then Carol's up. Anne, hello to you in Madison. Anne, are you there? Did we lose Anne? Huh. Must have lost her. Well, let's try Carol in Madison. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. This is great that you're having this program. I have just a comment about things to do to save money when budgets are limited. And I really don't hesitate to spend money on local organic produce, and I really don't feel bad about spending it on those prices, spending those prices on local items. But there's things that I used to throw away that I don't throw away anymore. And the thing I wanted to tell you about today is bread. I generally buy whole grain bread, and we also occasionally buy, you know, those white baguettes. And as you know, with baguettes, they really don't taste that good the next day. And white bread can easily be thrown in the freezer and later made into a bread pudding, which is a very low sugar, wholesome dessert type thing. And the whole wheat bread can be dried out and made into breadcrumbs. And why should I buy commercial breadcrumbs when I've got bread going stale all the time? Anyway, those are just some suggestions I had, and I'd be glad to hear what you say to that after I've left the conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Carol, for calling. And let's turn to Gail Coleman first.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, and I will say that I have learned a lot from the people that we work with. I mean, I get a lot of the tips from people that are in these situations. And another tip that I learned from someone one time is when your bananas are starting to get too brown, throw them in the freezer because you can always use them for banana bread afterwards. So, you know, that's a really important point with saving money on food is, first of all, trying to buy only what will not spoil before you use it. And then having some of these ideas for using food in another way, if it's starting to get a little bit too mm-hmm. ripe or
I assume you take the peels off before you throw them in the freezer.
Well, no? You know, I think that's probably a better way to do it. I haven't. And when I defrost them, they're very mushy to peel. So I think that's another tip I should try is peel them first.
Yeah, you can do it either way, Larry. But they'll look awful when you take them out of the freezer. They'll be very dark. But they won't have spoiled. The mm-hmm. skins just turn dark when they get too cold.
Mm-hmm. Anne in Madison got you back here. Hi, Anne. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Something went wrong the last time. I agree with the woman who called before the last one. I think we should all be in the streets. Hedge fund managers with high prices of food are making multi-millions of dollars. Same with the price of fuel. There are no price controls. Corporations are forcing these prices up. CEOs get millions of dollars when they're laid off or when they're fired because they didn't do a good job. The stock market is plunging. We ought to solve this problem politically. Instead of telling Americans that it's unpatriotic to be outraged, they should all be in the streets and we should all demand that this stop. I don't see why the little guy should tighten his belt until he chokes to death. I just don't see it.
Mm-hmm. I thank you very much for calling. Comment, Gail, you want to try a comment?
Well, the only thing that I would say is one of the reasons that the food stamp challenge was done last fall, and I know it's been done not only in Wisconsin but in other states, is to raise awareness and give people that maybe aren't as low in income some perspective of what it's like to live on a very tight food budget. And you know, although one of the things that I noticed when I did that is I kept saying, wow, I only have to do this for a week. And I can see how it could really be difficult and just emotionally draining if you had to do it for a very long period
every,
of time.
Every single time. Yeah, you sometimes wonder if the politicians from all parties would be asked to try that out for just 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
It might change some attitudes here or there.
And actually, Larry, some of the people who took up the challenge were politicians. And afterwards, they were interviewed, and they said, boy, you know, a lot of them just couldn't do it because, you know, with their social calendars and commitments, they didn't have time to cook and plan as much as maybe we would require to be able to meet those budgets. But they all said it gave them a real appreciation for the fact that we shouldn't, you know, just dismiss that there's a lot of food around and if people were smarter, they could do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Way back, I think I'm kind of a prophet, but way back years ago, I was on a school board, a rural school board from 1983 to 1989. And during that time, we were had taken away the requirement of home ec and were making it totally optional. And I made a presentation at the school board and asked that we make it a required subject again. And as time has gone by, I believe we've certainly seen that people have lost their ability to know what to do with a food product in the raw state. And my son-in-law, who's a wonderful cook, just last week discovered the joy of making butterscotch pudding from scratch. And he said, oh, so good. And so I'm wondering, is there a possibility ever to get in fact, this rural school district now doesn't even have a home economics teacher. And I, as I see how people are eating, it disturbs me greatly. And I was, you know, in school, well, I'm nearly 70, so I had required home ec in 7th and 8th grade and took it as an option in 9th grade and have been so grateful. And I think I still try and use those skills. And is there a possibility of ever reinstituting, I suppose this would be through the DPI, home economics in at least junior high and another year in high school, hopefully. And the other thing that disturbs me, too, is I remember, I don't know if 4-H still has or Extension still has the homemakers clubs, and people aren't home to do that anymore, I guess, either. But when I give to the food pantry, it bothers me because I think, are we also requiring these people to learn how to cook? Like when I get broccoli, I use the stems as much of the stem as possible to make broccoli soup. And there are just so many wonderful ways that you can save money and improve that final product.
Yeah, well, I want to give our guests a chance to respond, Mary, and I thank you very much for calling. Gail, you want to chime in here?
Sure. I can't answer the question about whether home economics will be required again because that's not in my scope. But I can tell you that we do have extension offices in every county, and they do respond to the needs of the state, and extension educators also in every county. And so that might be something that if you have questions about food preparation, food safety, things like that, you can call your county extension office and get answers. There also may be some programs, some classes that might be offered that might be of interest to people.
Yeah.
In addition, we also have, and this is the program that I work with, we have a nutrition education program in many of the counties in Wisconsin, and we do offer education in planning and shopping and making the most of your food dollar. And it's particularly geared for low-income families. So there are some of those resources in communities, even if you don't have home economics in the schools. But I agree that is one thing that is a problem because a lot of the skills that you need in order to eat well on a limited budget aren't necessarily taught anymore.
Absolutely. Talking about eating right when the money's tight today with our two guests, Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, and Gail Coleman, a Nutrition Education Program Specialist with UW Extension. I'm Larry Mueller. Sarah Carroll, our on-air producer, you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in our conversation as we talk with Sue Nitzke and Gail Coleman about eating right when the money's tight, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk at WPR.org. And Sue, you wanted to make a comment on our last caller's remarks.
Right. She asked about Extension Homemakers and if they were still around. They're not around by that name. Some of your listeners might remember that there used to be clubs in a lot of the counties where the Extension Family Living Agent would work very closely with people from the community in sort of home study, teaching circles, small group learning, and that sort of thing. And those programs still exist, but the organization is now an independent organization. We call it HCE because everything's in an acronym these days.
Yeah.
I think it stands for Home and Community Educators.
Okay.
And if you want to find out about HCE in your locality, you can call the Extension office and ask, and they'll put you in touch with the local president or, or the people who coordinate that. And I'll just also mention that there's so many more resources if you really want to learn cooking skills than there used to be. I think with No Child Left Behind, we probably aren't going to have the resurgence of home ec classes in the schools anytime soon, although I hope that does happen in the long run. But 4-H has scouting programs and Boys and Girls Clubs and that sort of thing. Many of them offer these kinds of classes, especially for kids in the summer, as a kind of a summer camp kind of thing. And there are cooking shows all over cable TV. And YouTube even has lots of, some of them are kind of, you know, fancy or silly. But if you search around enough, you can find people showing how they make their bread pudding kind of stuff. So there's lots available. Oh, and I forgot to mention the technical colleges as well. And some of the places that, here in Madison, it would be the food co-ops and some other places around town have cooking classes that are really fun. Even our union has cooking classes, the Wisconsin Union for Students. So if you snoop around a little bit, you might find some new opportunities that you hadn't thought about.
Yep, absolutely. Well, I've taught a few cooking classes myself.
Well, there you go.
And my wife, her first degree was as a chef school at MATC. So we have... We sort of have a little advantage over some people, maybe.
Well, and I bet your kitchen is well-equipped, too,
which is
a handy thing.
It's very well-equipped. Mary emailed us with a question. She says, I'm interested in the guest's ideas on eating well with a tight budget when a person has dietary restrictions, like a gluten-free diet. For example, a loaf of bread, which is quite small, is over $5 a loaf. Other than meats and produce, everything she buys from the other food groups needs to be certified gluten-free. And most of these groceries are very pricey. And she's thought about making bread, but doesn't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. She works over 40 hours a week. And even with the extra hours, with the rising price of food and her dietary restrictions, it's become difficult to make ends meet. She says, I feel like my grocery budget is careening out of control.
Mm.
So there's another tough issue to deal with.
Right. I can appreciate that because I do know those prices are even higher. And that is one area where it really does help if you have the time and the ability to prepare some things on your own, because you can buy the rice flours and, you know, the flours that don't have the gluten in them to cook things from scratch. But again, that takes time, it takes energy, and it's still probably going to be more expensive than, buying day-old bread or something like that.
And she mentioned that it's not just people trying to follow a gluten-free diet, but lots of people that have dietary restrictions or have to make adjustments are really feeling the pinch, especially hard because, you know, what already was demanding on your time and your skills has now become more demanding on your budget. So I don't have any magic answers. I think her explanation of the problem says it all.
Yeah. And you wonder if some of the organizations that are, you know, reach out or, you know, for people with a gluten-free diets or for diabetes or, many of those organizations, if they're not taking a look at that, maybe a look at those websites might be helpful, too.
Right. There are websites. There are several associations for people on gluten-free diets and for people with diabetes, et cetera. And many times the dietitian at your local hospital or clinic can help you get in touch with the right ones.
Good points. Julie and Mazamani is up next. Hi, Julie. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good.
Well, I had an idea. My husband and I decided to get a little proactive about a year ago with the cost of the groceries, and we decided to raise chickens. It's my understanding that a lot of cities do allow people to have chickens in the backyard, and I think Madison allows four or five.
Four. Mm-hmm.
Is it four? Yeah. So, you know, that's something for people to think about. We get eggs every day. You know, butchering a few chickens is fun, although maybe some people would think they were pests. Wouldn't want to butcher them. But an additional advantage, if you have dogs, is the fact that having four hens walking around the backyard, they eat the ticks.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, so we have actually added some eggs and meat to our family, you know, groceries, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, that actually brings up a broader point, which is raising food at home, whether it's having a garden or having even just a tomato plant in a big pot on your patio, raising chickens, having a goat. Depends on, you know, where you live and how much you want to invest of your time and energy and that sort of thing. But I would mention that in Madison and many other areas, there are community gardening programs that if you don't have the room and the equipment in your backyard, you can often sign up for a garden plot and they'll help you get it dug up in the spring. And Master Gardeners from the County Extension Office and their colleagues are available to give advice and help make sure that you get a harvest out of that and help get it to the food pantries if your harvest actually is more than you need. So there are some resources that, you know, maybe 10 years ago weren't as abundant that would be good to look into. And the raising chickens in your backyard is one example of a number of things that some families are finding is actually fun. And if you have children, they learn so much more about where their food comes from.
Well, and just sort of in support of what you're saying, too, we got an email from Anna who has, she says, even though I have a small yard, it's possible to grow quite a bit of food at very low prices in my yard, which is small by, she's from Madison, by Madison standards. She says, I harvest four more cups of strawberries every day during the month of June and several cups of raspberries a day for most of the rest of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Her startup cost for those plants was about $50, and they've been producing for the last 5 years. She also spends about $20 for seeds at the beginning of the year, and she harvests lettuce every day for the whole season. She continuously sows. Peas, tomatoes, peppers are also a big success this way, and for very little money and with a little bit of land, it's possible to grow a lot of food with a great nutritional profile. And certainly the food items that she mentions are all have a great profile. Let's put it that way.
Right. The quality is as good as it gets when you go out in your backyard and pick some strawberries and or raspberries and put them on your breakfast cereal. You know, I love it. I have a raspberry patch of my own, and I truly enjoy it. But you do have to be smart. I mean, you can waste a lot of money on a garden that isn't tended right, or maybe you didn't think to have your soil tested and didn't realize that you're going to have some pH adjustments to make and that sort of thing. So I really encourage people to find out what Master Gardeners have to offer and other programs to help you, you know, be successful, which on something that can be kind of a daunting task if you haven't done it before.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have some more callers online. Let's see here. Who are we going to go to next? Well, let's try Patricia in Madison. Patricia, hello.
Hello there. I hope I can state this correctly. We have so many environmentalists in this country who have been against various forms of alternate energy or finding sources of energy or use of it in this country, and yet they've been so enthusiastic about promoting ethanol production using our grains and corn. And with a lot of that going towards ethanol now, that is increasing our food prices too, and also the quantity of food available for the rest of the world.
Well, energy costs are a great component of the rising food prices, and one of the reasons is in the ethanol, the competing demands for corn between ethanol and the food supply and what's fed to animals, et cetera. So it's a very complex subject. And Larry, maybe you have an ag economist on sometime that can really help explain that to everyone.
Talk about that a little
but
bit
But I think
more.
Your caller does bring up a dimension of this circumstance that we're in that is, you know, good to learn about.
Yeah. Thanks, Patricia, for calling. Nicole in Washburn, let's go to you now. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I would just like to say that I am I'm a stay-at-home mom by choice, and I have a husband and two children, and we make everything work on less than $500 a month, and I do everything locally. I have a garden in my backyard in the summertime. I shop at my local grocery store. I buy local milk. I make my own bread, and I don't ever have a problem, you know, having to try to find the way to make ends meet. I just know how to cook, and I'm, you know, my home economics came from my grandmother and my mom, and I think that's really important as a perspective to say we need to be passing these skills down. Who's passing the skills down when I see moms in the store buying, oh, the most amazing crap in the, you could possibly see? It's just, it's shameful what I see other parents filling their kids with.
Well, some of that may be an issue of convenience. Sometimes it's an issue of not understanding. I know there are a lot of things in a grocery store, for example. You can buy, all right, you can buy the brand name cornflakes or whatever. But if you compare the labels of that particular one against the store version of it, for example, you find out oftentimes that the nutritional value is exactly the same for a lot less money.
And there are some organizations, Consumer Reports comes to mind, but there's others also that will tell you what they found when they tested the different varieties and which ones they think are the best for the price. You know, sometimes you can tell the difference in the way they taste and sometimes you can't. But yeah, if you do some research, are willing to do some planning and thinking ahead, making food in large batches and putting some in the freezer if you have a freezer, shopping, comparison shopping, reading labels, can be enjoyable. And cooking, especially having some of the kind of chef skills, has actually taken on, I think, some new interest in recent years. The caller pointed out that for a while there was seeming like nobody was interested in learning how to cook at all, and it was almost, I don't know, women's work from the past or something like that. But it is having, I think, a bit of a resurgence, and people are showing interest again. So I'm hoping the pendulum is swinging the other way. So, and I agree with your caller that would be a great thing.
We had an email from Phil, and I don't know about this particular book, but he loves it. It's called How to Live Cheap But Good, and it's an old book written by Martin Porras back in the 70s. But he still uses it and says there's a wealth of good information on frugal living, everything from rents and furnishings to eats and moving. And I don't know, Gail, if you've ever come across that one or not.
I'm not familiar with that book, but my guess is a lot of the principles are going to be the same. You know, it takes some planning. It takes some comparison shopping. Things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are some things that were smarter 30 years ago or 40 years ago than they are now, like non-fat dry milk. Mm-hmm. One of your callers mentioned that she does it more for convenience so she doesn't have to run to the store all the time when she needs milk. Back when I started studying nutrition, that was one of our standard recommendations, is buy the powdered milk because it's cheaper. Now you actually have to do some math and you may or may not find it's cheaper. Some convenience is cheap and comparable in quality, like a lot of cake mixes are just as cheap as making the cake from scratch and you know, fairly good product. Whereas other forms of convenience, you can really pay a premium for. I know one of the things that I like to do is buy shredded cheese in a package, but per pound of cheese, it's a lot more expensive. And you know, I could shred it myself. In fact, I do shred it myself for some kinds and buy the packages for others. So, you know, you have to decide for yourself how much convenience you're willing to pay for. But I want to point out to your callers or your listeners that that is something that you are deciding whether it's consciously or not. And the more you think about it and just do a little math, take your calculator along to the store, once you learn that I'm paying 20 cents a pound more for this much convenience and I'm willing for it or not, then you've made that decision and you can go with it. It's not like it's going to take a lot of extra time the rest of your life. But investing that little time now can really pay off.
Yeah. And Stephanie in Madison's up next. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Larry, and hi to your guests. Great show. I'm wondering if you guys have made any recommendations as to cookbooks that people could use that would have tasty but low cost recipes.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I don't have a cookbook specifically, but one of the there are resources online that you can access, and I believe they've been posted to the WPR website for this show. And there's actually a website, the Food Stamp Connection Recipe Finder, that has low-cost, healthy recipes on it. So although it might not be a book, that is one source.
Yeah, and we should have those posted. I didn't check to make sure that it was posted, but we have three different...
I sent two over posting on the website, and the one that Gail just mentioned is one of them. There are also some, like Gail mentioned, they're not always books, but there are resources on this topic. And if your county, most Wisconsin counties, the extension program has a person who coordinates the Food Stamp Nutrition Education Program, mm-hmm. and they really specialize at helping people find these resources and use them wisely. Also, how to find what you need at the food pantries or other sources of food that you might not have thought about in your area. They're really very good at knowing what's in your county, your town, that sort of thing, and that can make much more specific recommendations to help people. Everything from how to sign up for a summer program for your kids that serves meals to after-school programs that'll teach cooking skills, all that kind of thing. They're good at knowing what's in your area.
And Sarah, Carol checked our website to make sure that those were posted, and they are posted. So
yippee, thanks.
So just go to my go to Wisconsin Public Radio website in my show, and you'll find the postings those two websites. And you know this whole business about local as we kind of wind up today. Mm. One of the things that really kind of intrigued me, and went, where did I see this? I just read it a day or two ago. Walmart.
It's this morning's paper.
Was this morning's paper?
The Wisconsin State Journal this morning had a front page article about how one of the ways that Walmart saves money and gives their customers what they want is by offering more locally produced fruits and vegetables and food products in general.
Yeah, which was interesting.
And they were just one example of many stores that are doing that. And I think, Larry, you and I and Gail all shop at farmers markets and try to, you know, there's such a wonderful abundance of things right now. It's fun and it really can help save money. And being a little savvy about what's in season can make a tremendous difference on how much you spend on just something like blueberries.
Yeah.
So you can really, I think, take advantage of knowing what's in season and thinking about how you would enjoy that in your family meal. So is a wonderful tip.
We go through a lot of blueberries in our home.
When they come right by, I'm buying them all the time. Yep.
And right into the freezer they go. Mm. We buy lots of them and into the freezer they go. And a handful of those on your breakfast cereal in the morning is a great way to.
Right, but if you try to buy blueberries in the store in February,
you're going to pay through
fresh
the nose.
Ones will be a premium. So that's when you buy frozen if you haven't already put them in your freezer. Right.
Well, I tell you, it's been a real pleasure. We've got another program coming up, and I appreciate you both being with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been
happy
a real,
to be here.
Yeah, real pleasure, and a happy 4th to you both too.
Same to you.
Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, Chair of the Department of Nutritional Sciences, as a matter of fact, and Gail Coleman, Nutrition Education Program Specialist with UW Extension. She supports staff providing nutrition education to low-income families across Wisconsin. Sorry we didn't get to everybody. So the lines were completely felled. But that's the way it kind of goes. And coming up, we're going to talk about sleep apnea and some other sleeping disorders with our next guest, Dr. Mary Klink. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.